I'm here today in Melbourne, and I've been fortunate enough to catch up with author Colin Bertruni. Thanks very much, Colin, for spending time with me today. Okay. Now, I've got your two books in front of me, and as I was saying before we started, I found your first book, Omar and Enzo and the Big Talking Book, some years ago, and then I was really pleased to see that you've written another book, Creative Writing for Beginners, which has really just come out, hasn't it?
Yes, about 10 weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now, Creative Writing for Beginners, was that the original title, or... You know, it can be confused with, you know, a list of courses that one could do at your local community house, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't the original title. In fact, the original title of the book was A Thousand Benedictions. And my editor at Affirm Press, Rebecca Stafford, said to me, well, the book actually sounds a little bit too religious. And I understood what she meant. Mm. And I'd actually written the title Creative Writing for Beginners earlier on and discarded it because I thought that it only had to do with one thread of the narrative. And you've read the novel, so you know that that the novel follows the fortunes of basically two young people over the course of about 8 weeks. A young girl who's an aspiring actress and a young man who is attending a creative writing course. And so we decided to go with Creative Writing for Beginners, really that sort of tying into the whole notion that we write our own stories in terms of our lives as we go along. And as you know, because you've read the book, there are quite a few kind of twists and turns and surprises for the reader, even though it happens over just a really compressed period of time.
Mm-hmm. The book seems to have a fairly jaundiced view of creative writing courses. Does that reflect your own sort of view? And do you think it's possible to teach writing?
Yeah, I think it is possible to teach the mechanics of writing, the basic kind of the grammar, the expression, how to put sentences together and so forth. I think the creative part of it is more difficult to write and trying to unleash and tap into individuals' creative, imaginative capacity is probably a bit more difficult. There is a creative writing teacher in my book who is incredibly stern. And I guess people would generally describe him as being very old school. So he has a lot of respect for a lot of 20th century writers, great writers in the canon, Raymond Carver, Patrick White, Shakespeare. He doesn't have a lot of time for postmodernism. And he makes those feelings known in the course of the class. It's not so much that I have a jaundiced view of creative writing courses as such, but I think that what we've lost in terms of how the discipline is taught is basically an acknowledgement that there are objective standards of excellence, and that they're what we should aspire to, rather than a relentless pursuit of personal expression that doesn't take into account the canon of great literature that's gone on in the past.
What's really sort of leading on from that, what's really fascinating about this book and, you know, looking at your life and your experience, there's a great combination and interplay between theatre and writing. For you, you've had quite a bit of experience in theatre.
Yeah.
How did the two sort of connect for you?
So I worked as a professional actor up until 1994. The last production I was in was Neil Armfield's production of Angels in America at the Melbourne Theatre Company. Okay. And we toured that to Adelaide as well. So I guess, and in this new book, I kind of it was actually inspired by sitting in on a rehearsal that Neil was doing for The Seagull, Anton Chekhov's The Seagull, and that production starred Cate Blanchett, actually before she became the internationally renowned actor.
Our Cate,
yes, that's right. And I was sitting there watching that rehearsal, and I thought, because the part of Nina in the play, which is the part that Kate was playing, is essentially the role of somebody who wants to be a great actress and actually fails at being a great actress. And the paradox of that is that you have to actually be a great actress to perform that role. And I thought how interesting it would be to actually try and get inside the head of somebody who was given this dream role, who actually didn't feel quite up to it. And I guess it ties in with a really big theme in the novel about people, young people particularly, coming to grips with the gap between what their aspirations are and the reality of their lives. And so it catches them at kind of at age 29, where I think all of our kind of delusions about our future, in a way, our childhood delusions and our adolescent delusions about our futures need to fall away as we become adults, and we need to sort of work out what kind of adults we're going to be and what kind of futures we're going to have. And I think that this book tries to capture that moment.
And you've said this in another interview, I think it's very much about accepting one's limits. Yeah. Why is that sort of such an important theme for you?
Because I think that if you there's a great danger, I think, well, there was a great danger for me personally too, I think, in this notion that one's future is a vista of untrammeled opportunity, and that you could do anything you wanted to.
The Oprah Winfrey sort of approach.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that I actually think that it's easier to find a direction once you actually start to understand that you're not going to be able to do anything you want to do. That you need to actually concentrate on what your passion is, and that's inevitably going to put limits around, or if not limits, at least parameters around what that's going to be. And for me, it took me an awfully long time to reach a stage of confidence where I felt that I could actually write, for instance. I never believed early on that, you know, I was actually going to be able to do that. It took a long time for me to understand and to learn the discipline of writing, and so that didn't come out of an adolescent belief that I could do anything I wanted to do.
I could sort of understand that. I always sort of didn't write, I suppose, because I read so many things and thought, you know, that's just fantastic, you know, and I could never write like that, and something else, I could never write like that. But then suddenly I thought, well, no, I can never write like that, but I can write like I can write, and maybe that's enough.
Yeah.
Maybe that's all right. And that was a real sort of turning point for me to realise that, you know, you won't write like all these wonderful writers, but you'll write like who you are, and that is enough.
That is enough. That's exactly right. And I think that once that actually clicks in your head that you're not Raymond Carver, yes, you're John Bartlett,
much as you like to be,
or you're Colin Bertrini, and that's valid too.
Yes,
you know.
Yeah.
I guess that was a really big learning curve for me in my first book, Omar and Enzo. In the big talking book, I kind of felt that I was really, I suppose, feeling my way and trying to understand how to construct a book and do that kind of stuff. And I guess I can say with confidence that the second book is the book where I actually became a writer. I think it's a far more confident book. It's a book that's in many ways more complex because of the ways in which the two narratives kind of align and stuff. And I'm just a lot happier with it. The other thing is, the earlier book was about a very sad and dreadful kind of murder case based on a real murder. And that was a very cold and lonely place to be for, you know, 2 or 3 years as I wrote that book. So I actually wanted to write a book that was filled with love, and that's Creative Writing for Beginners, and it was just such a joy to do. I mean, well, writing is difficult, as you well know. So there were many times I'd be sitting at my desk going, I just don't know what the hell I'm doing. But you have to write through those moments, and you can and you do. But I just found the actual experience of describing how art can actually redeem a person, and actually afford us kind of really profound moments of transcendence, which I think all the characters in my book kind of find eventually, was actually a fantastic thing for me to kind of do.
You've mentioned your first book now, and I have to admit this is the question I really wanted to ask you, because having read your first book some years ago and then read Creative Writing for Beginners, it felt to me like they were written by two different people.
Yeah.
Totally different books. I mean, your first book is it's really on the edge. It's pretty savage. It's pretty angry. It's but it's just so different. Is that because you were sort of learning the differences in the two books? Is it because you've sort of learned a different way of writing, or living in a different sort of situation, or why are they so different?
Well, the first book, just to give people a bit of context, was actually about a really famous murder case that happened in Frankston in 1991. So basically, a young man murdered an older guy, and he was caught and apprehended and went to court, and he was acquitted of that murder by using the defence homosexual panic defence. So basically what happened was, he said, this old man hugged me, and I felt so threatened by that hug that I cut his head off with a steak knife and then I robbed him. That to me was such an appalling case and such an appalling miscarriage of justice that I felt that I needed to write about it, but I needed to write about it with no metaphors, no similes, really kind of just bare bones, kind of almost like reportage.
But then you built a story around that character. I mean, did you sort of work backwards from that sort of event and create a character
I did. But you're right, the writing in Creative Writing for Beginners is completely different. And I felt that I really wanted to kind of enter the world of prose styling, if you like. I actually wanted to give the prose a lot more richness, a lot more generosity. The first book's kind of mean on the reader in a way, because as you describe it really well, John, I mean, it is quite a savage kind of book, and it describes a very kind of dreadful, morally and ethically barren kind of world. The new book is just, as I say, filled with love, and I wanted to find a way of a prose style that expressed that. In doing that, I think I have found that my writer's voice, and I sort of feel that I will be writing like this in the future. And in fact, I'm working on my third novel now, and it's a further development on that prose style.
You're certainly very compassionate with the characters, or the characters in Creative Writing. Not much compassion in your character in the first book. But it seems like an awful jump, if I'm sort of persisting with this. I mean, how did you... I don't know, it just seems to me like they're written by two different people, and yet haven't watched about 8 or 9 years in between?
Six
years in between, How did you change that style sort of so quickly, it seems, in 6 years? Were you writing in between and writing other stuff, or... gradually sort of moving towards this new sort of style?
I think I actually the new book went through 5 drafts, and I think I kind of developed it through the drafting process. I was also I write a lot in my day job, but it's a completely different kind of writing, technical writing. But I guess the other thing that I did was that I kind of got lost in the writing that I love, and this is another thing that I write by I write in longhand, and I write with a whole bunch of like my favourite authors around me, so a whole bunch of books around me, and if I get to a block in my own writing, I just sort of pick up one of those randomly and open it randomly and just read a paragraph, and invariably that will kind of that will kind of solve the blockage in a way. And I guess I felt that, that earlier style of writing, that kind of bare bones reportage style of writing, wasn't very sustaining for me as a person. Like I felt that I needed the actual process to be more generous and easier on me. And that gets back to the whole kind of concept of finding moments of joy in the writing. And you're a writer, so you know that it is a pretty tough slog, but there are moments where you think, I got that right, that's fantastic. I mean, you know, it can be weird later on when an editor comes in and goes, well, I don't like that moment, so, but that's a separate issue.
Yes. I think you've said in another interview too that, you know, there was quite a gap between your two books. And because, you know, you've got another job, is that an advantage or a disadvantage, do you think, to take a long time to write a book like this?
I think it was a real advantage for me because I read an interview with the writer Alan Hollinghurst, who wrote The Strangest Child and The Line of Beauty, and he said that he is a very slow writer. And I think that I write very slowly too, because I actually like to think, actually enjoy the process of actually thinking through what I want to do before I actually kind of get it down on paper. I'm not the kind of person who just sits there and sort of scribbles out reams and reams and reams.
No.
Although I do think it's, conversely, I do think it's very important to sit down at your desk and write at least something every day, even if it's just 50 words. Because a story can go cold on you, or you can lose the thread of it really easily. The other thing that I do, I did a lot with creative writing for beginners, and I've since found out that a lot of authors do this, but I didn't know this when I was doing it, is that my process is that when I sit down to write, I will read aloud what I wrote yesterday, and that to me is a fantastic barometer of whether things are working or not. You read something aloud, I guess it comes back to my time in the theatre as well. Once you read things aloud, you can really determine very, very quickly if something's not working. So that's been a great kind of help to me.
There's also a link to me. You talk in, there's quite a bit of matter in creative writing about Philip's stories and his drawings.
Oh yeah.
And then I noticed in here in your first book there's a lot of little drawings on the cover and that. I wondered, is there a bit of a connection? Are you an artist as well as a writer, actor? Is
that, yeah,
is that,
I mean,
other little,
the cat's out of the bag. I mean, I designed the covers of both of my books. I'm a graphic designer by profession.
Right.
And
okay.
I don't do a lot of little drawings, but I design a lot of stuff. So I guess that feeds into another aspect of the new novel, and to an extent the previous one, is that I guess I'm a very visual person, and I try to kind of provide the reader with a world that, or provide a reader with some details in a world that will allow them to actually see what that world is.
Yes, yeah, yeah. In another interview, I think it was an interview, A Story in the Age, made quite a bit of your coming out as a gay man.
Yeah.
And I'm always sort of interested, I sort of imagine that you don't see yourself as a gay writer.
No.
But I do wonder how that sort of sensibility sort of feeds into your writing. I mean, there must be an effect.
It's a really interesting question. I kind of really am suspicious of identity art, like anyone who describes themselves as a gay artist or a lesbian poet or a feminist weaver. I think that needs to sit kind of certainly alongside what you do, but not be at the heart of what you do. And I suppose in both my books, and even in my new book, there are gay characters in them. I think that what that experience did for me in terms of growing up actually gave me a sense of both being different and also being excluded from things in a way, because all my brothers and sisters are heterosexual, and I've got six brothers and sisters, and they've all been married and got kids and all that kind of stuff. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that I won't do, even if gay marriage becomes legal. I'm not getting married, and I'm certainly not going to have children. So I guess this idea of being separate from things having a slightly different way of looking at the world has been with me, you know, since I was a child. And I think that really comes out in the character of Joel in my book. In many ways, I was like him. I found a kind of comfort in reading when I was a child, because it allowed me to enter into all sorts of different worlds. And I think that happens for every child who loves reading, whether they're heterosexual, homosexual, or whatever. And I guess I've always really, really believed in the redemptive power of art. And for me, it's almost like a religion. In fact, I think that the Bible is the most brilliant piece of fantasy writing in the world, and great, certainly the most successful. Writing,
literature.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. I've always believed in that power, but I've also sort of, it's always been curious to me how devalued it is in our society. So I saw recently Liverpool played to 95,000 people at the G, and it was the most fantastic communal experience. And yet, there's no parallel experience in relation to art, which I think is actually more powerful than a football match, and certainly more sustaining. And will certainly be with us longer. So I've always found that quite curious. So in some ways, this book is a real tries to make the case for art in a kind of unpretentious way. It was tricky because the book could come across as being quite wanky if you describe it as, I wanted to describe the redemptive and transcendental aspects of art.
Yes, that's the subtitle.
Yeah, but you read it, so you know that it's not.
It's
not.
It's a story about people. Yeah. Pretty much like everybody else too.
I think that I like to think that, you know, that there's a fair degree of humour in there as well. The other thing was that I wanted to parallel, but not slavishly, the story of the seagull. I think that there's enough signposts in the novel itself so that people don't actually have to be familiar with the seagull to understand, because characters talk about the play in the course of the novel enough so that people will understand what those parallels are.
Yes. Okay. Well, I have a lot of other questions, but we might just leave it there.
Okay, John.
Certainly enjoyed Creative Writing for Beginners very much, published by Affirm Press, and looking forward, and I for one will be looking forward to your next book.
Okay, in 6 years' time.
6 years, yes. We're all slow writers, but that's okay.
Thanks, John.
Thank you very much, Colin.